Hello, my beautiful Broadway friends. It's your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. The Broadway Cast is a weekly talk show that features unique conversations with Broadway's brightest. Additionally, The Broadway Cast gives a voice to fans all over the world like they've never had before. So let's get to it. This is The Broadway Cast. Let's get on with the show.
Yay!
Give my regards to Broadway.
A lullaby of Broadway.
There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid. Because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid. And now we're
here. You guys remember that
yes.
one?
I loved that.
That was a great, big, beautiful Tony opening
yes,
number. Hello, true everybody
was.
Out there.
Hi,
hello,
Benny.
It's
hi.
The nicest. You guys won't believe the panel that we've assembled today. But of course, this is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron. You're listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast. It's a family affair today as we welcome from Dear Evan Hansen the Murphys.
The living Murphys.
The living Murphys.
The living Murphys. Oh, that got dark. But that's just part of life. And that's part of the show. And that's what we learn when we go to see Dear Evan Hansen. But let's meet the panel, shall we? Find out who these marvelous Murphys are. Seated to my immediate left is somebody I've known for a hot minute.
She made her broad
in a hot minute.
Yes.
Haven't you felt it's been hot?
Yes.
It's been a very hot, sexy minute almost, as long as we've known each other. She made her Broadway debut in Footloose, which is also where I made my Broadway debut, yeah. playing Ariel Moore. She got a Tony nomination for Hope Cladwell in Urinetown. She played Glinda in Wicked and starred in Lend Me a Tenor. She was Ellen Evergreen in Nice Work If You Can Get It. The company at the Philharmonic was a
fantastic.
Revelation. Was a
yeah.
revelation. You're a huge megastar playing Cynthia. I know. Cynthia Murphy.
The list goes on.
Jennifer Laura Thompson! I mean, for real, though, that's a heck of a resume. And that runs a real wide gamut as far as styles and types of characters that you've been able to play. And I'd like to ask you right off the bat, because you do work in a show where you have to go there and it gets deep and it gets hurty and it gets guttural every night. But you're so funny. I've seen you in things that you're so wildly hysterical in. You were hilarious as Glinda.
Thank you.
What do you account being able to bridge that gap? What's the secret, JLT?
I don't know that there's a secret. I think when I graduated from college, I thought I was more of a dramatic actor that would hit on roles more similar to someone like Cynthia, as people who deal with tragedy in their lives. Once Urinetown came into my life, it opened a world of comedy that I had not explored other than some high school musicals. And it was so much fun that I rode that for a while. Uh-huh. But to have this at this point in my life is so important, because transitioning as you get older in this career can be very difficult to navigate where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
And so to play an age-appropriate role, which I've said before, I've never actually played an age-appropriate role.
Usually 16-year-olds.
Yeah, no, like 27 was the last one. Can you believe that?
Atta girl.
And also to draw on life experience and real experience that brings this character to life and that I can share with the theatrical community and the world, you know, it's amazing. It's a yeah. great opportunity.
You're tremendous.
Thank you.
You really, really are. You know who else is tremendous? He's sitting over here, and sometimes he's a little bit Russian. He is 2-time Emmy Award winner as Jack Strider on As the World Turns.
Snyder. But it's cool.
Is it Snyder?
It's Snyder.
And I... Let's do that again. We're going to edit that. You're like, what a jerk this
it's
guy
Snyder.
Turned
no,
out
it's
to
all
be.
Right. I don't know how you got Strider. Most people say Schneider.
I blame the interwebs.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I do. I feel
shame.
Thank
I,
you,
shame.
Lord
shame.
Dreyfus.
Shame. Shame.
Thank you.
Shame.
We need a
shame.
Bell. We need a shame bell. Listen, I'm ashamed of that. I'm also ashamed of my décolletage being out
yeah,
here for everyone
you're
to
beautiful.
See.
Beautiful.
It's like four.
Can we get
weird...
a close up of his second button?
It's a handsome
is
devil.
Is it really?
Can we get a
is
close up?
I bought the shirt at H&M, so well, I don't know.
I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know if there will be
product
a shirt left
placement.
At all by the end of the
yeah,
program.
Yeah, my 4-year-old daughter. Sorry, she didn't sew that correctly.
Oh, that
I know.
Was a dig.
Golly gee, he's a 2-time Emmy Award winner for playing Jack Snyder on As the World Turns. He starred as Angus Tuck in Tuck Everlasting. Of course, you know him as Larry Murphy, currently in Dear Evan Hansen. He was Monty in the off-Broadway production of Violet, and my personal favorite, Michael Park. because I saw the show about seven times, and I think it was your Broadway debut in Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Yeah.
I went nuts for Smokey Joe's Cafe. I saw it seven times, and you were Elvis.
I was the white guy.
You were the
white
guy.
It's okay to say.
Can we just go ahead and we can say that?
Yes, we can.
We can be free about that. What was, and that was fresh out of being in a day-to-day soap opera world. What was the difference?
Was that right?
No, no. So, Smokey Joe's, the interwebs kind of led you astray again.
I'm so sorry.
But it's okay. It's, I that was in 95, and I started As the World Turns in 97, and I was there for 13 years.
Oh, wow. So it was the theater that took you then into the
right. Rob Ashford was the one to kind of pull me out of my, you know, slumped over, very depressed state after As the World Turns closed and put me in Hello, Dolly. No.
Oh, yeah.
He put me in, no, he put me in How to Succeed in Business. Hello, New Delhi. It's a new musical coming out.
He put you in the Book of Mormon where you sang the entirety of the opening number, which is called Hello.
So, yeah, How to Succeed. Wonderful. And so I'm forever grateful to Rob for doing that.
And rounding out our panel today, audiences know her as playing, and now I'm so nervous about my interwebs and my research.
I'll correct you.
Will you get me? Yeah, I know her as Madison McCarthy on Glee.
Oh, I was going to say, that is
Bam.
Zoe.
She's like, that's not right. She's also appeared on Broadway in Once, and of course, plays Zoe Murphy in Dear Evan Hansen. Miss Laura Dreyfus is here. Laura, we were just at the flea market the other day, and at one point, you know, they've got a lot of people who aren't actually coming up through the line to get the autographs. They're standing behind red ropes, and there were two or three girls in two or three moments when I just saw a young lady standing at the front of that, shaking and crying and weeping, and I kind of walked as far as they would let me go, and I held the microphone out, and I said, little girl, why are you crying? And through her tears and her sobs, she just said your name.
That she
was in such close proximity.
Well, now you're making me cry.
And that was it. And then she just wanted to stare and be in your presence. And with the incredible reaction and fan support and love for the show, how often do you get that? And what does that mean to you?
Every now and then when we're signing, we'll see that. But I think it speaks to the show. I think the show really moves and touches people in a way that I've never really experienced at this level. And so it's a beautiful thing to actually see that, to see those reactions. And
my daughter wants to be here, too.
Oh,
yes, yes.
I mean, I want to be Annabelle Park.
So. and spend more time with Laura, stitching on buttons.
Yes, we could sew together.
Don't want to say the crazy word, but kind of the most over-the-top devoted expression of love a fan has had for you.
Yeah, it's intense, for sure. I guess the craziest? Someone sent me a potato in the mail.
God, I was hoping you would say that.
Actually, I got
Is that
two.
A metaphor?
I got two potatoes. They were at separate times.
It's a thing.
Is it?
A thing.
I still can't figure it out.
Printed on it, right?
My face was on it.
Right.
It was a potato.
They made you imprint her face on anyone's face on a potato.
I'm even afraid to say this because I feel like saying this, they're going to send me more.
Please don't.
Right.
No. Oh, but you've got, Liz, you live in New York City. There's only so much shelf space. So two potatoes is plenty.
I think it's safe to say that I would like one of those potatoes.
Oh, gosh. Careful what you wish
you
for.
Michael Park.
Oh, my God.
We're putting it out there to our listenership. Michael Park is feeling very bad for himself that he didn't get a potato.
It's quite all right.
Oh,
in the mail.
Oh, please, no.
That came through the stage door, yes, though, not to your...
Nope, that came to my... Well, it came to my dressing room, yeah. Not,
okay,
like,
yeah.
My
not
personal
your
dress.
House. Not to your residence.
Right. I would
then
probably
you have to
move.
Get the potato police involved, and it becomes a whole thing and a thing.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be living in New York anymore.
Yeah. I'd be somewhere safe, like Scarsdale.
Could build a bunker.
We had to have a little bit of fun, just to kind of loosen up at the top. I learned this in my 2 months at AMDAV.
See, what happens is everything shakes when you do that. Yeah. When you
it's
get
supposed
old
to
enough,
mean that you're loose, but really.
When you get old enough, everything.
I can hear your
everything. You're just kind of becoming, it's a Katharine Hepburn sort of moment. Oh, that's
no, it's too soon.
Too soon. All right. The game we're going to play is called You Can't Stop the Beat. So what we're going to do, we're going to establish a beat.
I'm so scared.
It's going to go like this. Jump in when you're ready. Mm-hmm. There it is. There's a... Oh, dear. Come on. Oh, dear. All right.
She got it. She was in Footloose.
She was in Footloose.
That's why they wouldn't let her dance in her town.
So we all clap. Now, we're going to go round robin through the panel. I'm going to give us a subject. And we're going to go and see how far we can get until someone drops the ball.
I'm the worst.
I don't actually know how to play this.
So, we're gonna figure it
for example, the theme is going to be all families. So, what I'm going to ask you to do first and foremost, as we go around without breaking the rhythm, is to name famous fathers in musical theater canon. Five, six. JLT. Ready and go.
Caldwell B. Cladwell.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Archie Bunker wasn't in a musical,
but could have been.
Billy Bigelow, does he count?
Sure he does. Mufasa.
Mufasa. Fish. See, I'm the worst. I'm going to swear so much.
I was ready for the next one.
What were you going to come
really
up with next?
I had one too.
Larry Murphy.
Yeah.
Hamilton.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He's a dad.
George Washington. Keep going.
But we're changing. We're changing the theme now.
Leslie Odom Jr.
No, what?
We're moving on.
Yes.
Famous mother characters in the musical theater canon. A five, six, mother it out.
Cynthia Murphy.
Good. Yep. That's good. Yep.
Rachel Bade Jones.
Ah, that'll work.
Yeah, I know. I stole yours.
Patti LuPone in Gypsy.
Oh.
Fantine.
Oh. Vi Moore.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't know. Another mother in a show.
Okay, good. Next.
See? That went well.
Mm-hmm. One last one.
Okay, let's check it out.
Is everyone just sweating a little bit?
The next topic is musical theater children characters.
Oh.
Poof. Here we go.
Okay.
We're going to reverse
it. I can't think of their names.
We're going to start with...
No, because I know one.
You know, weren't they all children at one time, though? You just start naming...
If that's how you want to play this. I think that's crazy like a fox. Here we go.
Am I starting?
I want you to.
Matilda.
Oh, nice.
Young
Simba.
Oh. Annie. So boring.
Young Cosette.
Oh.
Ivanka from Once.
Zoe Murphy.
The whole entire family of Sound of Music.
Liesel.
Billy Madison. No, Billy.
Elliot. All right, Billy Madison. Talk about great movies.
Billy Madison.
I got to tell you.
Wonderful. That movie is yet to be made. I mean, that musical is yet to be made.
When Billy Madison really started to dance, I think it changed the way that we all looked at ourselves. Oh, well, I think that's a good round of...
That went well.
You're really trying.
We'd like to just get to know, for our listeners, let's start at the beginning. I'd like to know from each of you kind of what the first moment is that you remember when you saw our production on stage and you know, that moment you get bit by the bug. What did you see that made you say, I like that. I want to be a part of that. Do you remember? In community theater?
Oh, jeez. That was
Jennifer Laura Thompson.
I do. I remember it very... clearly, because I had fallen in love with the genre in high school, not knowing that it was actually, you know, a whole industry. And we took a trip senior year to New York City, and Mystery of Edwin Drood had opened that year, and that was my very first Broadway musical. And
Betty
I remember
Buckley?
The feeling, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the feeling that I would give anything to be the second girl on the right, anything to be on that stage. It felt so important and beautiful. And it was invigorating, yeah.
Michael Park?
Similarly, we took a trip to New York in high school, and we saw Song and Dance with Bernadette Peters. And I remember in the second act, Greg Burge came, the late, wonderful, great Greg Burge, came flying out of the wings and did this flip and a half and landed on the stage in pike position. And I just, everyone kind of leapt to their feet. And I thought, I want to do something that makes people feel that way.
So you're in it for the applause.
I'm in it for just for the adulation. You're right.
You're like, I don't want to do that move per se.
Oh my gosh, it was really incredible. And I just remember going, wow, this aesthetic feeling and experience that we had. I just wanted to kind of recreate that somehow.
Lord Dreyfus.
Yeah, I saw the Broadway production of Les Mis when I was six. And I remember it so vividly. And it was, I was totally blown away by the whole thing. But I remember when little Cosette was singing Castle on a Cloud, I was like, that should be me.
That is, if you don't know that, listeners, every actor who is watching another show and watching other actors on stage, somewhere in the back of their mind are going, I could do that. It's evil, but it's true.
Yeah. It's true.
And so then when was the first time from seeing that, being inspired by the grandioseness, if that's a word, just made it up, of theater, when was the first time you remember being on a stage?
I sang Somewhere Out There from American Tail in the talent show when I was 8.
A classic.
Oh, the very first time you're asking that we...
But that
did
was...
you do it as a duet, or
no,
you said, I can do this on my own?
It was a solo. I did the whole thing as a solo. And
Aaron Neville right out of it.
Yeah, my sister, who was 18, starting her first semester at NYU Tisch, and she was giving me like acting lessons to like really visualize the moon... the moonlight and the vision that I was creating. And so I was learning how to act basically from my sister's freshman 101 acting class.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's Michael Park.
Again, I don't know if it was singing My Name is Michael in kindergarten and feeling wonderful and having that sense of wow, this is a lot of fun, or being in Miss Howard's fourth grade class and rehearsing I Write the Songs for Barry Manilow. Barry Manilow's I Write the Songs for my mother's cabaret act that she had at the Colonial Inn in Canandaigua, New York. And I remember singing I Write the Songs at the Colonial Inn at like midnight as a fourth grader.
What?
Yeah.
With a cigarette.
Yeah, well. And I just, I loved being on stage. I just really enjoyed the applause. So, yeah.
It's intoxicating.
It really is.
Intoxicating. It's a dragon to chase.
Had less to do with my performance, I'm sure, than it was being 10 years old and being out till midnight.
I did get a little inside scoop on you, Michael, from somebody who grew up with you in Canandaigua.
Oh, really?
And the story, as I am told, is that your performance, and I believe this, if I'm right here, was Guys and Dolls. No, Bye Bye Birdie.
Bye Bye Birdie.
You're Bye Bye Birdie. Mm-hmm. I heard that
it was
to
awful.
This day you can't walk into Canandaigua and hear your name and talk about Bye Bye Birdie without everyone buying you a drink.
Wow, really? Who told you that? You're not going to give up your sources?
I'll give up. His name is Fran.
His
name is Fran.
That sounds like a song title.
Yep. She thinks his name is Fran.
Fran.
But the point is that it's apparently legendary to this day in Canada.
Oh, that's nice to hear. So. I saw a VHS of that, and I was appalled. So thank you, Fran.
for our listeners, who, sometimes we have to help our younger listeners out. A VHS tape was a large, bulky item that you would hold with both hands and have to rewind it before you returned it to the Blockbuster video. But I don't have time to tell you about what that is. Jennifer Laura Thompson.
First time I performed, I remember so well getting my first solo in seventh grade. I think I might have had them in elementary, but they didn't really mean much for some reason then. It was really competitive by the time we got to seventh grade. And middle school started at seventh grade, so suddenly we were with these older kids and we're competing all against each other to get. And I remember getting ripe strawberries, ripe. That's about how I sang it, too. Ripe strawberries, ripe. Yep. Uh-huh. And I remember that being, and the nerves that, stepping down from the bleacher, or whatever this, and that I remember that feeling, and that getting it out was so exhilarating. And then, and there was another giant ensemble show that you had to audition for, and that was even more scary. And initially, she didn't pick me, the director of the show, and then she did, and I got to sing this beautiful song, Who's Sorry Now, from the 50s.
Uh-huh.
And my mother would probably remember this. She, we had five kids. I was one of five, and they were late to the game getting to my concert. So she came into the building as I was singing, and she said, "Who's that angel singing?" And she realized when she walked in, it was her daughter.
Oh.
And then she knew.
She did.
You need
she
that.
Said
you
I
need that support
my...
from the parents.
Yeah,
to,
when I was
to know
born,
that you're...
I opened my mouth and swallowed my head, is what she always says.
I'm trying to picture that.
I don't know
that.
What that means.
I'm not sure what it means either, but it's probably, I think I've seen it on American Horror Story.
I was going to say, you know, back when my parents were in high school, as I was listening to your story, I was remembering that my father played Albert and my mother played Rosie when they were in high school. Back to the
Bye Bye Birdie of it all.
So that I do remember that was what was special about
for them to be able to say, "Oh,
right. Yeah.
Look
right.
what we've made."
Right.
So, you know, with your fabulous Broadway careers, what from the moment that you got that bug, got on stage, heard that applause, take me quickly through what your road to Broadway has been. We'll start with Laura Dreyfus.
Well, I basically grew up watching my older sister do theater. She was in the original cast of Mamma Mia when I was like 12 or 11. And so I remember... It just always seemed like a very attainable thing for me to just be on Broadway. It's that easy. That sort of was my mentality. But then obviously realized it wasn't like that. And then, you know, did all the musicals and plays in high school. And
what were your roles in your high school musicals?
Terrible. I actually never got the leads. I was always in the ensemble. I was like, you know, in Guys and Dolls and all those classic ones. Mm-hmm. But then I got to college. I went to Boston Conservatory. And again, didn't really get any roles. Like, I was really weird. I never did much. And then graduated, and thankfully through Showcase got an agent, and I went to like the open call, like the non-equity open call of Hair back when it was on Broadway, thinking like, this is my shot. Like, this is my shot. And it was like thousands of people there. And I ended up getting it months later when it was doing the tour. So I'd gone in again, and it was funny because Jordan from The Public, the casting director, was like, "Oh, you realize you were the only person that we cast, ended up casting from that crazy cattle call."
Amazing.
Isn't that wacky? But yeah, so, I mean, I obviously had auditioned again. It wasn't just from that, but yeah, he put my headshot in the yes
pile. That's a great story.
I know.
That's a great story for any aspiring actor out there who is busting their asses to go to these cattle calls wondering, this is never going to happen for me. This is never going to happen for me.
And then, I was on the New York City sidewalk outside The Public at 4 a.m.
Oh my gosh,
waiting.
That's a great story.
Waiting to go in.
Yeah. Standing next to all these people dressed like crazy hippies.
Cool.
But yeah, so anyway, did the National Tour of Hair, and then... Yeah, that ended up going to Broadway for a summer, and that was my Broadway debut, which is so cool. And then after that, got Once, did that for a year, left and did an off-Broadway show at New York Theatre Workshop, and then Dear Evan Hansen and Glee.
Yeah, where did the Glee come into it?
Well, that's also a crazy story. I was actually, we were in the first reading for, one of the first readings for Dear Evan Hansen, and we had the first time they were presenting it to investors, I think, and...
Which is a totally no-pressure situation.
Yeah.
No one's nervous about that.
Right. And I remember 3 weeks ago I had sent in a tape for Glee. It was like a tape with the casting director at Telsey, and... So I didn't think anything of it. And then my agent called me. I remember I had left rehearsal being so excited because we were working on Requiem with Justin Paul and Benj, and we had raised the key, and we were all so excited because it sounded so much better. And I was just like, I left the studio with this like feeling, like this rush feeling. And
thanks for that, by the way. Raising the key. Great. Keep going.
Sorry. And I remember I was in Columbus Circle, and I was just like reveling in the joy of like working on this new musical with these people that I had admired for years. And then I got a call from my agent being like, "Remember that time that you sent in a self-tape for Glee? Well, they want to screen test you and fly you out to LA tomorrow." So, and I was like, but Dear Evan Hansen. And they were like, or it wasn't even that yet, but I was like, but the Pasek & Paul workshop. And they were like, yeah, you're gonna have to miss it. I'm like, no, I can't do that. And I was like, do whatever you have to do. I can't miss it. And so they figured out a way. My agent was so mad at me for a minute there, but they figured out a way to fly me out on a red eye. I missed one day of rehearsal.
Right, right.
And then
the
came back literally 6 a.m. the day of the presentation after I had screen tested. And I read I Didn't, and I was, yeah, it was like I was seeing three people every time I looked at someone. But, mm-hmm. yeah, and then from there, it was kind of seamless. I went to L.A. for 8 months, did Glee, came back, did the D.C. production, and then here we are.
Amazing.
In a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Park?
Well, I was kind of living in her story. I don't know if I want to tell mine. I'm a product of community theaters. I went to Nazareth College, and I'd done one show in high school that you were talking about before, and my girlfriend in Nazareth, now my wife, Lori, forced me to audition for Guys and Dolls in college, and we've heard the story a million times, guys, so I'm going to tell it again. But and she kind of forced me to audition for this thing, and I said, well, I'm not a music major, I'm not a theater major, I'm never going to, they're not going to cast me. And she said, well, we'll be in the ensemble, it'll be great, and we'll be in the back of the theater, and we'll do our homework together, it'll be so much fun. I audition, and I get cast as Skye Masterson, and she does not get cast.
Oh,
only because she was a voice major, only because sister Barb did not want her to ruin her operatic voice on musical theater.
Sister Barb is sister always Barb getting in the way.
No, she taught my mom and my aunt too. It's kind of wonderful, Sister Barb. But that's
shout
the
out.
Reason I'm yeah. Shout out to Naz. Naz, go Golden Flyers. But after that, it was, and I was cast as Mr. Cellophane in Chicago 2 years later, and I was not going to do this seriously until I got a call from a friend saying, "Hey, the musical director, hey, they're looking for a hero for a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum," and I really got the bug then, to tell you the truth. It was a hero, and then I opened my eyes to all this community theater, this great community theater that was in Rochester, the Blackfriars Theater and Downstairs Cabaret, and all these different places where people with day jobs can go and kind of like fulfill their fantasies of being on stage every weekend. And it was really cool to me. And so one thing led to another, and I ended up at Jiva with mm-hmm. Josh Brolin and the director was Anthony Zerbe doing Ellen Universe Joins the Band. It was a new place festival and Peephole. And I was introduced to Allison Bevan, who introduced me to who's Michael McCormick's wife.
Too many names.
Right? Sorry. But, you know, people who do listen to Playbill know these. I'm sorry. Spinning. You don't know.
I fell asleep.
If you knew. See, I told you my story sucks, Laura. And then I get
Lori.
To. Yeah, call Lori. She'll tell you the story. And then I remember getting the call. I remember getting the call to come down to New York to audition for Phantom of the Ken Hill's Phantom
right,
of the Opera.
That.
Yeah, I never want to say Ken Hill's Phantom of the Opera. From a friend who I was doing these community theater shows with and saying they can't find a Raoul and they can't find a Phantom. So I said, all right, well, of course I wanted to be the Phantom. And I get cast as Raoul. My mom was on the other end. For those of you who don't know, there used to be landlines and they were attached. So I could be on the phone and my mom could be at the phone at the same time in another room. And so she...
Depending on the size of the cord you had.
So, right.
You could move around.
My friend asked me, so do you think you can make it down to New York? And I went, and my mom, who's on the other end, says, yes, we'll be there. Yes. Click. And so she drove me, my mom and dad drove me down to New York to audition for this. And I auditioned at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And they asked me to come back at noon, and they said, well, my parents were like, why did I want you to come back at noon? I said, I have no idea, Dad. I have no idea.
Right.
So I walk upstairs to 890 Broadway. It was 890 Broadway. So I walked up all the stairs because I was really super nervous. And I'm on the other side of the table, and the producer says, so how would you like to be our Raoul? And right a minute, not a second later, I said, yes, sure.
Yeah.
I just agreed to it, and they didn't even give me the, you know, I didn't negotiate at all, so that wasn't too smart. But I remember driving home with my mom and dad. My dad looks in the back in the rearview mirror and says, Michael, you know, you realize you've picked an occupation I know absolutely nothing about. And I kind of silently went, yes.
Yes, yes, I did.
And that was kind of the beginning, because right after that I moved to New York, and my first audition was... Luckily enough, it was Hello Again, and they auditioned me like five times for that.
Yeah,
And that was a fun moment.
I like this coming from the community theater world. I think there's something when you're talking about people who have day jobs and 9-to-5s, right, who they come in and use their spare time to do this. And I think it maybe never quite is as fun as in community theater. When you have to
love seeing community theater productions.
Too.
There's so much joy,
yeah,
in it. That yeah. it's actually some of the most inspiring things I've ever seen.
Have you seen a community theater production of something you've been in?
No, but I would love to.
Really amazing.
It's got to be magical because now you know what to look for.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there goes the dentist with his tray, like always.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I love that stuff. It's never quite that much fun. Jennifer Laura Thompson.
What was the question?
The road to B-Way. Got lost in the names.
I got.
I don't have to be here.
sort of simple, but also I had a loose plan. I did end up going to the University of Michigan and graduating with a BFA in musical theater when it was a fairly new program. I was only, I think, 4 or 5 years old, and I worked for a summer in regional theater I worked at a theme park, let's be honest.
Let's do.
Because it was the only thing at the time that would pay me enough to get my equity eligibility, which I think the rules are different now, but that allowed me to go to equity calls. I didn't have to go to non-equity calls.
Right.
And that was, I was all about that. I said, I want to work to make money. I don't want to work because it's just an art for me. I need to make a living. I want to make a living.
Do you recall the names of the theme park shows you did?
The Legends of Rock and Roll.
Uh-huh, naturally.
I sang the Stones and...
Can you sing a little bit for us right now?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get it all wrong. I met her there on a corner standing away at that bubble. And she's looking real pretty. Some people seem to have everything. She worked hard for the money. Yeah, I was a swing, so I had to sing all it. We went from the 50s all the way through the 90s. And it was the worst summer of my life. Yeah.
You weren't even a lead?
I swung all the women in it, yeah. And I saved up, I think $4,000, and I moved to New York, and I told myself, when that runs out, I'll try something else. And continued to audition, but booked a nice job within a couple of months touring Europe. And and then I think soon after, some regional theater, came the national tour of Carousel. And then right. I was already bitten. I was like, all right, I'm here. Yeah. I bought an apartment. I'm here to stay.
And thank God for it. And then you got to put on the red cowboy boots.
I did, which I still have.
Are you in a show? I know you are. Do you want to add some Broadway flair to your school or community theater production? Well, Playbuilder lets you build your very own Broadway quality playbill program. Each playbill is fully customizable for your production. Dates, song title, cast names, production credits, artwork, and even advertising. It's a great way to promote your show, raise money for your organization, and create a professional, printable program. Save valuable time with Playbuilder Express. Select from thousands of pre-populated programs in our database and simply begin to customize your production's playbill. Visit playbuilder.com to learn how you can create your own playbill today.
Do you guys remember the first time that you opened up, when you got to Broadway? First time you opened up a playbill and saw your name in that, and what does that mean to you? Laura Dreyfus?
Yeah, I remember that. It was really cool. Just opening it up and seeing your headshot was really wacky. I've said wacky twice in this thing. I've never said that word before.
It's a wacky place to be. Feel free to wacky it up.
Yeah, I feel like with every show too, every time I open the playbill, that's such a special feeling.
I like the big picture book
too.
Those
are cool.
Those are cool.
Oh, the big souvenir program. Yeah,
souvenir program. There you go.
I probably have about a half a dozen Footloose programs still at home.
That's
I don't
awesome.
Need to keep all of them, but I probably have that many.
I think I do too, because there was it turned into the Footloose Five at one point.
Yes.
They changed the playbill because they were trying to get the teenage girl market, created a boy band out.
And they had to do a number at the end of the show, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
Full blown.
I had to do that number.
Boy.
And I And I, because I came in to replace one of the really sexy guys, and they're like, I guess you'll do the part. So here comes like the big goony tall guy. But I, they didn't get a lot of rehearsal. I was walking forward, and the drop's supposed to come in after Footloose. And they're supposed to just stand in pin spots and sing like an R&B rendition of Let's Hear It for My Girl, Sexy, Sexy.
Yes.
And I got hit on the head with a drop.
Oh, no.
Concussion.
And I thought that maybe my, I had broken my head open, that I was bleeding in front of teenage girls that I was trying to seduce, and I didn't know if that was their thing or not. and then, it turned out I was okay, but the Footloose 5, I have a lot, all those programs.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Dear Evan Hansen and the phenomenon that it has become. What do you, I think this is probably, there's many facets to this question, but why has it resonated so strongly with so many people? I mean, people are contacting you and reaching you out from all over the world, you know. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the secret sauce here?
I think the fact that it purely reflects a story that is told today. And I think that that's what's, I mean, so special about it. And we have now incorporated social media and our phones into our lives, and it's now a part of our everyday, and we don't necessarily know how it affects us or what it means. But to see something that is just telling an honest story about these characters, I think it's a really interesting, it's really interesting as an audience member, I think, to see that and to be like, oh, I get what that feeling is. And it's a unique feeling just for this time that we're in. And I think it will continue to be interesting because social media is not going away, but we're still figuring out how to navigate this really gigantic tool that, like, right, really, it's like a hammer. You can either use it for productivity or something bad. It could be a weapon. So we don't really know how we're supposed to function in this day and age. And I think that this show is a really interesting just display, really, of what it is to live as these flawed characters trying to figure out their lives.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's that you bring up a great point. Everyone in the audience can relate to one of these characters in some way. And that's what I love about the show the most, is that when you're signing autographs and someone says, oh, you remind me of my dad. You remind me of my dad. They can't, obviously, the kids that come to our show can't possibly relate to what the parents are going through. But they can see a little bit of what they know in their lives in us. And I think that's
it, creates empathy.
It really does. I'm just so glad to explore this character every night for the purpose of reaching these kids.
It's a character in a moment, too, in that particular scene with the ball glove that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was able to take something from that was not exactly my experience, and it resonated in my personal life. And I imagine that it's got to happen so often. Mm-hmm. And that's so powerful. Jennifer?
Mm-hmm. The topics are very, very relatable and messy, and we're all flawed, and we go out and bear everything on the stage with a text that is very modern. The I'll call it a play, is very modern language, very, very relatable, and it feels like a play with incredible music. And I think that the ability to appeal to multi-generations is something that I find unique in musical theater, because especially as parent types in musical theater, that's often an archetype or like a very cookie-cutter version of a parent, and then the children are the focus. Mm-hmm. But in this show, although it's called Dear Evan Hansen, it's about all of us and all of our struggles, and I think that parents relate to the parents and see themselves in us. The kids see something new about their parents. The kids see something about themselves in the kids. The parents understand their children better. It's a very complex story that opens up a lot of doors for discussion.
Yeah, and it certainly has. Now, as actors, were there moments that you took during the rehearsal and creation process that you three took time to deal with each other as actors to create this family bond? Is there something to that kind of expanded beyond rehearsal even? Or
I think DC was probably the biggest for us. We would do outings together. It really felt like a family because we were all together in this apartment building. And there wasn't really much to do where we were except like two restaurants, and there was a city bike. So we would take the bikes and go on bike rides, see all the monuments together. And
every day.
Yeah, we really did it every day when we were done with rehearsing. And so that was a really special time. And I remember we would come back and Michael Park would be cooking us food and grilled cheese.
Are you a cook, Michael?
I
love to barbecue. So yeah,
and he's a great host.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would buy all these crabs from the wharf and come back and... It was like
that was my birthday.
200
I hated not being around my family for my birthday. It was killing me. And these guys were so amazing. I'm getting verklempt talking about it. I really am, because I love these people like they are a part of me. And I've been doing this for 25 years, and I've never felt this way about a cast. I mean, it's just a very, very special group of people.
Yeah, and did you feel with having that time in D.C. and these outings as actors, as people, as Michael and Jennifer and Laura, did you then, when you got into playing your characters, were you able to utilize that and see each other in different ways or have different empathetic moments and feelings about each other and your character work?
I believe so. I think most of our scenes we're very conflicted with each other. So if you only focus on the conflict and don't recognize that there's a real, really strong bond that exists there, it's not a full picture. So, you know, the development of our friendships and the love we have for each other has made, I think, our characters much deeper and more profound in their presentation than it is to just have an argument on stage.
I trust these people explicitly. I think these people are incredible, and to go to those very vulnerable places that we do every night, you need people around you that love you as much as you love them. And that's the way that's my kind of canned answer, but it's the truth. When someone asks me, how do you guys do that every night? It's because of the faith and the truth I have around me that allows you as an actor to kind of go to the places you need to go to.
It's also when you're developing new material, we go through so much as actors. There's highs and lows. There's cut songs, cut scenes.
Frustration.
You know, you don't really know what's happened. Tech is a maddening experience. and I think to have these people, these professionals who understand these characters and this art so deeply, and we all care so much about the outcome and how these characters are represented and how the show is as a whole, I think that was such a solid foundation for us because... We really went through that together as a cast.
And the worst thing that can happen is that if we don't trust each other, you can't invest in the show.
Yeah. Impossible.
So we have to trust. There has to be absolute trust on stage.
Yeah.
And the fact that I can ugly cry and not feel weird about it is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're ugly with the entire balcony. I want you to know when I saw the show, the ugly cry. Are you aware of that? Are you?
No.
Are you aware? Do you feel that in the house?
You hear sniffles.
Doubled over
in the first couple of rows. Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, I was sitting.
I'm too busy going.
Well, I want you to know that they're doing the same thing up there.
I'm going to be a little more quiet next time.
I'm going to turn this to the parents. The experience and what you've learned in playing these characters in these extreme circumstances, has it adjusted the way you look at parenting in human real life?
Well, my experience of parenting has not been typical, I'd like to say. Mm-hmm. So I relate to her in a way that I find very gratifying to portray on stage, that even the most seemingly perfect family or situation can actually be very complicated. Michael has a great answer in terms of that, because we've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. But my son is a 13 and a half year old, so I'm...
How'd that happen?
I know!
Supposed to be a tiny baby.
I know! So it's helped me forgive myself for any of the things that I've, you know, hit myself over the head for not getting right the first time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much about the show is about forgiveness as well, Michael.
Yeah, I think that she kind of hit it on the head when she says forgiving yourself. I think we have to realize that none of us are perfect, and it's okay to not be okay sometimes. And I've realized through Larry Murphy that as a father, I might not have made all the right choices myself, but he's also helped me explore and express myself completely different now as a teammate in this Park family, because that's what you need. You need someone who's going to communicate well and going to express themselves well. And I think that the doors have been opened through Dear Evan Hansen for me to kind of walk through and see what my kids really need and what they're really going through and how adolescence sucks.
Gosh,
and
gosh,
how
gosh.
You know and how they it because of the social media and the fact that it's everywhere and the fact that they communicate now through solely just about FaceTime and Snapchat and
Instagram lives,
and Twitter and it's just and you can't express sarcasm through a tweet. I mean, you just can't or through a text, and it's really really difficult to be an adolescent, these days, and so I must say that it has opened my eyes to the way I communicate to my kids.
I'm going to take this to you, Laura, because ugly cries and the moments that have to happen on stage, and you have to trust each other within. I was speaking with Garrett Long last week, and I think she had just been on. I was like, "Well, how are you even standing?" And questions, you guys, talk to me about what's the backstage life. Is there a way that you guys keep it light and have a little fun backstage? Come on, let's get to it. There's gotta be.
Yeah.
There's just gotta be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've said this so many times, but like this is a cast of comedians. I mean, everyone is so freaking funny, and I think the thing that stands out to me the most particularly? Is that the right grammar?
I've made up four words today, so you're doing
wacky.
Great. Whenever you hear the secret word, the word is wacky. Scream real loud into your car stereo.
But yeah, no, I think after words fail, when we leave the stage, we're both Jennifer and I are sobbing, and we are just like taking tissues and like putting them on our faces, but we have to go up the stairwell, and Mike Feist, who's also in the stairwell as well, and then you follow shortly after. We kind of just do the weirdest things, whether it's like crawling up the actual railings and making like really strange sounds, or
before the show starts, she is knuckles deep into some Rice Krispies, and she's just going to town on these Rice Krispies as the table's going out. They haven't even rolled out, and I'm just shoving them in my mouth too. And Mike Feist at early in the production would kind of brood, and he's playing with his spoon, and he's brooding, and the two of us would look at each other.
So
and just,
moody.
Grab some Rice Krispies and just start throwing them at him and try to get him stuck in his hair and get him all, stop, what's going on? It was just, that was just the best thing ever.
Oh, it was so fun.
And then Jen's doing yoga over there, and every deep bend she's doing, we're making fart noises, and it's just fun. And I'd like to rush down and play air cello for Sincerely Me. And if I have to get down super early, because if I don't, this one, I'm pointing to Laura, is in the stairwell waiting for me, going as slow as she possibly can down the stairs, looking back, taking her time down. It's just we need that. There was a time when Rachel B. Jones and I would make up these songs that we learned at camp.
Oh, we would do it in just, the circles.
Oh, it was just yes, in the circle as well. It's just.
When you find Laura in your dressing room unexpectedly, and you open it,
does she just appear?
She just waited.
I will wait for them.
She waited an entire scene.
Yeah, I will go in early because I know that they're coming off stage, and I will go into their dressing room and wait as long as
it
takes.
The door.
Right in
as
the door
long
frame.
As it takes.
So when they open the door frame, I'm right there in their face, and it's a great joy.
We've kind of reduced ourselves these days to Mike Feist and I to playing video games up in my room, so it's kind of mellowed out.
What are you taking?
Borderlands. Playing Borderlands.
It's so boring.
I know it is.
Is that a shooty?
Oh, yes, of course
guy?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes, we're shooting aliens and all kinds of things. Nazis.
I mean, like physical therapy, and all I hear is
please try to relax your psoas. You're like, we got to duck and cover. All right, friends. We all know we love Broadway. And if you're anything like me, I can only imagine that you also love a great vacation. So why not combine the two and take a Broadway-themed vacation with Playbill? That's right. Playbill Travel has been hosting the biggest fans of Broadway all over the world on incredible week-long cruises that get you up close and personal with the biggest and brightest stars of Broadway. I'm not joking. One night you can hear an amazing and intimate performance by, I don't know, let's say Tony Award winner, an amazing human being, Christine Ebersole. And the next morning, you're going on an incredible excursion through Iceland with her. Check out PlaybillTravel.com to take a look at Playbill's cruise up the Rhone River in France, where guests and Broadway stars had the time of their lives. Playbill Travel has two amazing cruises lined up between now and July of next year. So head to PlaybillTravel.com to book your soon-to-be most favorite vacation ever. One of the things we do enjoy here at the Broadway Cast, we like to connect with people who are doing theater all over the country, all over the world. We have our community theater shout out, and sometimes we just source some of our listeners to ask them if they have questions for you guys. And so we do have some of those. Here we go. This is from, we got this on Twitter, from at Wannabels, W-A-N-A-B-E-L-S, at Wannabels. And she wants to know, hello, first of all, hello from the Philippines.
Hello.
From the Philippines.
From the Philippines, yep. How do you react to people telling stories that you've impacted their lives in a positive way? That's a good question, Juana.
I'm just very thankful that they shared the experience with me and that it meant something to them. They often will want a hug, and I'm not ashamed or embarrassed to give a hug outside the stage door. Some people feel a little uncomfortable, but or some people are too shy to ask. And when you feel like, you know, if they want a hug, just come on, give me a hug. Yeah. And without becoming too personal on my behalf, because I'm not, you know, I'm not a trained physician of any sort, so I can't really give any real advice, but I can say how much I appreciate them sharing that and that I'm so grateful that it had a great impact on them.
I'm really super lucky to be a part of this, is what I tell them. I'm so lucky to be a part of this story, and that Stephen Levinson and Passing and Paul and Michael Greif crafted this, and Alex Lacamoire crafted this fantastic piece of theater for people to live in and live from.
Yeah, we're all in this together. Yeah. I think it's such a great, it's great because I, you know, I get so many letters from, you know, a lot of young girls, and they always say, like, I saw your show, I loved it, and my story is a little bit different, but I feel very alone. And they always say, like, it's always the same thing that they're saying, but they don't realize that I get 50 letters, like, the exact same thing. And it's kind of a crazy thing.
So it's like they're not alone.
Yeah, exactly. And so you realize, like, oh, we really are all in this together.
And many of them have found each other online, which is amazing.
This is from at Martha S, Martha underscore S. What quality do you most admire in each other, professionally or personally?
Oh, I love that question.
I do, too.
Way to go, Martha. Matt,
I
love that question. Things. We're not going to answer it, but
no, we're just going to look at each other and try not to cry.
Yeah, there's so much beauty in both of you. Really,
I love your humanitarianism. Is that I made
wacky.
Up the word.
Wackiness. Word.
Everybody, take a shot.
I'm so proud of you. As a human being and what you do and the sacrifices you make for other people, Laura. And it's very touching. And Jennifer, you are just about the funniest, most talented, wonderful. The fact that you have to cry at the drop of a hat is something that is astounding to me. And you make it so real and so believable, and you're so in the moment every single night. You never drop the ball, and I'm so grateful.
It's seriously like Jennifer's professionalism and the fact that she just puts so much of herself into this role every single night, and we see how hard it is. I don't think the audience really sees how hard it is because she doesn't get redemption at the end. She doesn't get. She doesn't. She lost her son, and she has to go on this horrific journey, and she does it so beautifully, and it's so inspiring, and you know, to just always feel so safe around her. And then off stage, she's such a joy. She's so hilarious.
She's telling fart jokes, and then 5 seconds later, she's weeping.
Like doubled over.
It's the most amazing gift.
Yeah, and I think Michael, you're just you're one of the most encouraging people I know, and you are so generous and you always think about others, and you put so much care into your relationships, and I so admire your relationship that you have with Lori and your kids, and it's so beautiful to watch because you really do give your all in everything, and so it's
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for your friendship, guys.
Michael, I like your sneakers.
See? That's what I'm talking about.
Wherever you are listening to this right now, I want you to reach out and touch somebody.
I'm so proud to know Laura and have her in my life. I'm so proud of your groundedness. Your talent is astonishing, but your ability to stay grounded and your sense of humor just hits me in the right spot every time. She's so wacky.
And she's just so wacky.
She's just so wacky. And I couldn't be prouder to share the stage and call you my daughter. I mean, that's just amazing. And Michael Park, you are a fine man. No, I'm kidding. The joy that you bring me off stage, it is equally as fulfilling as what we share on stage, and it's completely necessary to create the balance to get through this together. And everything you do makes me laugh. Everything you do makes me laugh, and I couldn't be happier and more grateful to have that in my life in this process. And I hope that both of you are in my life forever.
No. One more question. This comes from @BridgetLouise13, and she wants to know, how do you guys warm up vocally for a show?
I warm up classically every single day because I don't sing hardly at all. I mean, I sing in the show, but it's a lot of straight tones. It's a lot of very low music. And if I don't warm up the high stuff and the whole range of it, I'll lose it.
Yeah.
So every day I warm up the way I would as if I were singing a full range scale of music on the stage.
Yeah.
And all the yelling needs to be warmed up for, too.
True.
Because that's where it really hits you, too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I take a couple Tylenol and go...
I believe that.
I'm good.
No, I use, it's really interesting. I use waving through a window to kind of warm up all those straight tones. And I'm able to kind of figure things out as I go along every day because it's different every day. But Requiem is, I would think, the hardest song I sing in the show, and so I kind of warm up specifically for Requiem. But after that is over, I think I'm relatively
home
free.
Yeah, I work with Liz Kaplan once a week just to work on, because when you do a show 8 times a week, it can be really easy to get kind of stuck with your voice because it becomes muscle memory. So you have to train your muscles to kind of remember that it can
do
other things.
I mean. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. So I just do some of the warm ups that she's, structured for me and do some physical stuff too, just some stretching and yeah.
Yeah. If you guys could each swap parts, if you play any other character in the show, who would you play?
Jared. I mean, everybody says Jared.
I actually
is that the truth?
Yeah.
If I were cast in this, if I were lucky enough to be cast in this 25 years ago, I think I'd be a Connor. I really enjoy that track and getting to play or morph into not only play Connor, but morph into what Evan is thinking Connor is and what Jared thinks Connor is. And so I think that would be a fun challenge.
My friends, we're running out of time. If you listeners out there, if you have not yet had the great opportunity to go see Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway, well, tough. You can't get a ticket. So the good news is that it'll be around for a long time to come. And thank you guys so much for sharing so much of your love and your hearts with us today. I think it's been really special and makes me want to go call my mom a little bit and give a little bit of love. So we thank you for that, for what you put into the show, and beyond that, for your incredible careers beyond that.
My goodness. Thank you, man.
Plans to stay in the show for a while now?
I'm staying... I think we're all staying until mid-May.
May.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And then vacations.
You're already planning vacations in between now and then.
You will absolutely earn them. I want to say thank you to Laura Dreyfus, Michael Park, Jennifer Laura Thompson. This has been your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying have a great show.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, guys. It's the Murphys.
Wacky. I liked it.
Make sure you tune in next week for our Broadway debuts episode with Eva Noblezada, Bobby Conti Thornton, and Dear Evan Hansen's own Crystalline will be here as well. Woohoo! Repping all around. So you don't want to miss that. Peace out, yo. Huh? Never said that before.
Wacky.
Wacky.
Make sure you don't miss a single episode and subscribe to us on iTunes. And now you can listen to Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast on Spotify.
And while you're at it, follow us on all social media platforms @The Broadway Cast.